Hello and welcome to episode 22 of Track. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This week on Track, in part two of our Olympic Marathon Trial special, we have an interview with Frank Baddick. Frank, who has impressive times across the full range of distances, including a 1:49 800 metres, a 13:56 5K, and 2:15 in his marathon debut, sat down with George a few days after competing at the Kew Gardens Olympic Trials race and discussed his preparation, his training, and all things running. In this very brief pre-show episode, I am joined by George. How are you, George?
Yeah, doing well, thank you. Training well. Nice to be back on the track for a session on Saturday. Just training. How about you? Good race at the weekend?
Yeah, it was okay, thanks. Yeah, so I did the half marathon at Kempton Park race course. It was okay. It was a solid run. I ran 71 minutes. I'm hoping to run a little bit quicker, but all things considered, I'm not too disappointed. So yeah, 3 weeks hopefully till the big race. So much like you, really just training and looking ahead to a solid race coming up. Your track session was quite tasty, wasn't it?
Yeah, I did 2400s at 5K sort of pace off 30 seconds. So I find that quite tough, particularly on the track, I think, because you run through the line, kind of turn around, get your bearings, and then you've got 5 seconds left. So you don't really have any standing around recovery. But yeah, I did like 68 and a half, I think, the average for the 400s, and then 5 minutes recovery and pretty hard 800 at the end. Trying to get close to 1500 pace, I thought it might be more like 3K pace, which would have been like 2:14, but managed to run 2:09, which I was really pleased with, and put the spikes on for that one as well for the 800, and nice to put some spikes on again.
Very good. Yeah. All things looking good for whenever you jump into a race.
Might be doing there's a Loughborough Open on the 25th of April, so I might be doing a 1500 there to get ready for a BMC in the early May, 5,000 metres. So that's the plan. Okay.
Very good. Well, talking about races, George, we're just going to fly through some of the main races that have actually happened this week. And since our last episode and since restrictions have eased, there's actually been quite a few sort of high quality races that have taken place. I'm sure everyone who's listening probably heard about the Podium 5K, which took place in Barrowfield, and where we saw a potential world record run from Beth Potter of Shaftesbury Barnet. And she ran a time of 14:41 to take the win. She was actually mixed in with some of the men in her race, but an amazing time, 14:41. Unsure whether that will be ratified just yet, as I'm sure we'll discuss next week. Ratification depends on things like drug testing happening on the course certification, all the rest of it. So unsure whether that would actually stand as a world record, but a world record time, at least from Beth Potter. In the men's race, Tom Mortimer of Stroud and Loughborough Uni won the men's race in 13:39, which was a 32-second PB, and probably fair to say a bit of an upset. George, I know you won a bit of money back in Tom Mortimer to win that race, which is good.
Yeah, it's good to have betting on running. I think every now and then, yeah, a few bookmakers will do betting on like the Olympics and stuff like that, but I think there is a place for it in athletics, so it was good to see them kind of make a breakthrough with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And another great event. So in the men's elite field, the first 10 finishers all ran under 14 minutes. And obviously with Beth Potter becoming the second fastest woman over the distance in history and the quickest on the road, goes to show how quick that course is and the quality of the field. Really good event there, as always, at the Podium 5K. We also saw the comeback 5,000 metres that same week, which was held at Battersea Park, which was hosted by Belgrave Harriers and Herne Hill Harriers. We saw wins from Jenny Nesbitt of Cardiff AC in the women's race and Phil Norman in the men's race in times of 15:46 and 13:46, respectively. Again, good feed, so good action to watch live for all the races on that comeback 5,000 metre meet. So in that same meet, we also saw very impressive performances from Adam Clark of Aldershot Final and District, who finished second in 13:48. I know something you'll probably pick up on, George, in third place, was Rory Leonard of Morpeth, who ran 13:50, which qualified him for the under-23 European champs.
Yeah, that's right. So, I think it means he's got a standard. I still think there'll be selection if more than two or three athletes have the standard. But even so, 13:50 is seriously quick for an under 23. So,
yeah, and also to mention Henry McLuckie, who just missed out on that 13:55 time, didn't he?
In the last sort of 30 years, only Alex Yee has run faster as an under 20. So I think Henry McLuckie's gone quicker than Farah. He ran the European Championships standard, which is this year, and World Championships is also this year for under 20s. And he just missed out on that by a second and a bit, but I'm sure he'll give it another go.
Perfect. So definitely a name to look out for in the future. In a women's race, Hannah Irwin of Guildford and Godalming finished second in 16:01. A couple other 5K races, events that took place, actually, we're recording on Monday the 5th, and the Fast 5K in Wigan has taken place this evening, and the Ardingly 5K took place this morning. In Wigan, we saw wins from Laura Waitman and in the women's, and from Richard Allen in the men's. And at Ardingly, we saw wins from Sarah Aston and from Ellis Cross. So yeah, some really good racing across the shorter distances. George, you're going to take us through a few other races that have taken place in the last week.
Yep, so a couple over in America. Charles Hicks, who's runs for Shaftesbury Barnet and he's at Stanford Uni, he ran 28:25 on his 10,000 metre debut. And I think I saw on his Instagram that he ran the last 5K in 13:53. So a massive negative split as well. I think that was a 5K PB as well in the last half of the 10K. So that's not bad. That was 45 seconds quicker than the qualifying standard for the European Under 23 Championships. So I imagine he'll definitely be in that team. And then Patrick Deaver, who finished fifth or fourth, I think, at the NCAA cross country. Fifth a few weeks ago. Runs for Preston, former Loughborough student, and now studying for Tulsa. He ran 28:28 in his 10,000 metre debut as well. And Jack Leach ran a 1 minute PB of 29:47. There were also good runs for Bella Williams of Lincoln Wellington and Grace Brock of Cornwall, who ran 33:17 and 33:59 respectively. And then Poppy Tank of Plymouth ran a 5,000 metre PB of 15:45, also in America. And then elsewhere, we saw world record in the women's half marathon from Ruth Shepin-Gettich. She ran 64:02. That was 29 seconds quicker than the previous world record. And then the men's race was won by Kibiwot Kandi, the current half marathon world record holder, and he ran 59:35.
George, I know we've mentioned a couple of those performances already, but what's been the standout for you from that list?
Obviously, podium was pretty remarkable, particularly Beth Potter, and then seeing a fellow Loughborough student win the men's race as well, Tom Mortimer. That was brilliant to watch. But I think the Charles Hicks time in America, the 28:25, and like I say, I'm pretty sure he ran the last 5K in 13:53, which is a massive negative split and like ridiculously quick on its own, let alone a 14:35K before it. And like we said, the Henry McLuckie and Rory Leonard performances were really impressive as well. So definitely like junior British distance running appears to be in a really good place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure those names are names we're going to be saying in the coming months and years for sure. The Beth Potter thing, I'm sure we'll talk about this more, sort of reinvigorated the shoe debate. So she was wearing some new A6 racer shoes. How much do the shoes help, and should these be allowed, and do we need to reconfigure what we are calling quick these days? Aside from all that, just a brilliant performance. Okay, George, thanks for that. We're not going to ramble on for too long today, George. We're just going to introduce the interview with Frank. So you sat down with Frank, as I said, just a few days after he ran the Olympic Marathon Trials event. It was his first marathon. What can we expect from the interview?
Gave us a really good insight into his marathon build-up. I already had a pretty good insight, as it was, because he's my coach at Loughborough University. Just to hear about his training, like the changes he'd made from sort of his 800, 1500 training, and then he's gradually moved up through distances onto the road and then in the marathon. So just to hear changed as he's moved through, and just his overall thoughts of the race and the events as a whole, as the trials. Interesting interview, I think, and hopefully people enjoy it.
All right, thanks very much, George. Thanks very much to everyone listening. We hope you enjoy the interview with Frank Baddick, and we hope you enjoyed last week's with Clara Evans. We were hoping to bring you a nice little Olympic marathon trial special, part one and part two. So hopefully we've done that. We'll be back next week with another interview and another show. So thanks very much for listening. We hope you enjoy, and we'll see you soon. Cheers, George.
Cheers. See you soon. This week on Track, delighted to be joined by Frank Baddick. Frank has kindly agreed to talk to us 6 days after running his debut marathon of the GB Marathon Olympic Trials at Kew Gardens. Frank ran a very impressive time of 2:15:58, finishing eighth place. Frank runs for Newham and Essex Beagles and is my coach at Loughborough University, having attended Loughborough himself. He has an impressive range of PBs from 1:49 for the 800 metres to 2:15 for the marathon and everything in between. Thank you for joining us, Frank. How are you? How are the legs 6 days on?
Slowly but surely recovering. Physically okay, but I think the running, or the first jog back, reminded me that it was a marathon, not a 1500.
Yeah, and I think you said on your Strava, didn't you, that the last kind of 4 miles were just getting to the finish line.
Yeah, the race plan was to get to 30k as comfortable as possible, and I think I kind of, at least I thought I kind of got there. I was starting to catch a few people. And I felt good, got to 35k, and it was, I now understand the phrase, the wall, because it went from feeling fine with 3 laps to go to 2 laps to go was a completely different game. And then 1 lap to go was just about getting to the finish line.
Yeah.
A long 4 miles.
Yeah. And how did you find the lapped course? Is that like a little bit demoralizing at times? I know I've done like 10Ks on the track, and if you overcook it and the board says 18 laps and you're already struggling, it can be a bit demoralizing. How did you find that?
The laps were fine from my point of view. For anybody that's followed me on Strava, I did a lot of lapped running. So I don't, it didn't bother me particularly. The hardest bit became the wind, which was, as you were getting tired and getting further into the race and quite a lot of time by yourself, knowing that you're going to come back around into the wind, that was harder than knowing that it was, that you had 5 laps to go, 3 laps to go, 2 laps to go, so on. But no, the laps were fine.
Yeah. And what did you think of the course as a whole? Because there's quite a lot of talk about it going into it, about certain turns or the width of the paths. Was it better than you were expecting?
The width of the course was absolutely fine, certainly for the number of people that they had racing. The turns weren't too bad, but again, I think because it was a fairly small field, there were a couple of turns just before the sort of 10k, 20k, 30k, 40k marker, which was fairly tight. But yeah, the turn into the feed station, you had to kind of like lean into a little bit, but you train on worse than that course. And given the COVID situation, it was almost ideal. They really couldn't have picked much of a better place, and given the fact that it was fairly windy, it could have been a lot worse than it was. So fair play to Runfest for getting that all together, because it must have been a pretty big challenge.
And that your race, from your point of view, so you said get to 30k being pretty comfortable, did you have a time in mind? Was it the Commonwealth standard? I think you went through the half in about 67, is that right?
Yeah, I think I went through about 66:40. I'd intended to go with the lead group, the second group of pacemakers, so the 66-minute group. It felt too quick at the start, so I kind of backed off. Everybody said that you'd feel pretty dreadful in the first 10K of your marathon having tapered. But that, the wind and not really having anybody to run with, made it probably that much harder than it really needed to be to get to halfway. I hadn't really, like, the Commonwealth time was sort of in the back of my mind. We hadn't really talked about what my goal finish time was. It was more just go with that second group of paces and see what happens. I think, like, in my mind, I think my training was showing that I thought I could have run quicker, but I was conscious not to be I guess not to be arrogant and to respect the marathon distance, because you don't know until you've done one. And I really get that now.
What did you sort of think as the trials as a whole, from like a fan's point of view? Do you think they're, do you like the trials? Does it risk not taking the best team, or is it, how did the whole experience?
I genuinely feel gutted for Johnny Mellor. Like, you know, for anybody, you know, when was the last time a British guy ran 2:10 twice within 12 months and didn't make the Olympic team? That's unreal. I think, you know, but then you look at Tomo, and like, I've known Tomo for years. He's worked so hard. To see him go to the trials, run a PB, win it, run his race. Like, you know, that's amazing. I think if they, I guess on reflection, the kind of the trials were great, the course was great, the actually kind of setting it up as a championship race just for the British team was good. I think they probably just need to do that sort of 2 or 3 years out from the next Olympics to give people time to plan. Like, there is, you know, fair play to Johnny, who tried to run 3 marathons in a year. That's pretty tough going. So I think, you know, give it a bit more, give people a bit more time to plan and assess what they want to do, and I think you probably get, you know, an even better event than they had.
Yeah, that's more or less exactly what we said on, I think we recorded on Monday, and we said, I mean, obviously they do it in America as well, and America have the luxury of a bit more depth, more people with the standard, but they everyone just knows, if you're not in the top 3 of the trials, that's tough, and that's just the way they do it. But
yes,
it was short warning for the British runners. We interviewed Johnny Mellor back in December, and like, he'd ran, like you say, 2:10 twice. You'd have thought he was an absolute shoo-in in a minute.
Yep.
It's just a freak injury that kind of gets him ruled out of it.
I think that, it would be, I quite like the sort of the, you know, 2 or 3 past the post, get the spaces. It makes it kind of a true run race, and they really did go after it at the front. Like, fair play to them. Some of them paid for it.
Yeah.
Tomo was sensible and came through. But that's kind of, I guess, what makes the racing exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And what were your thoughts of it being on a Friday? I think beforehand I was a bit confused why it was on a Friday, because just from TV point of view. But I'm sure you had to put the day off work.
Yeah, I'd say. Yeah, I'd booked the, well, I took the week off before. So I was, you know, fortunate. I think anyone that's a teacher or a job where you can't just book in your annual leave kind of almost when you want it, it's probably slightly unfair. I think it was probably on the Friday more because it was Kew Gardens and they wanted it to be open on a Saturday. So it was, you know, we started at 8 a.m. because we had, like, they had to be out of Kew Gardens by 12 o'clock lunchtime, like, the event taken down and gone. So that was, I guess, another challenge that they had to deal with. But from my point of view, it was fine. I had had the time off work and made it work for me.
Just going, like, a bit more about you and, like, back to how you've got to being the marathon man you are today. You started out at North Devon and Bristol and West, is that right?
Yeah, North Devon AC from probably 10, 11 years old, maybe, through until maybe like 18, probably pretty much when I went to university. I went and moved to Bristol and West for a year, I think, maybe two, and then moved to Newham after that.
And then you then went to Loughborough University, and like I said, you're now a coach there as well. As a junior, from your power of 10, it looks like you ran pretty much exclusively 800s and 1500s, PBs of 149 and 342. Did you ever see yourself moving up through the distances like you did?
I'm not sure I ever really saw myself running a marathon, but I think it takes quite a lot of running, and I guess kind of like, well, for me, it took quite a lot of running and progressing through the distances, and I guess sort of finding what I wanted to do. When I came to, well, at North Devon AC, I was definitely, I thought, saw myself as an 800 meter runner. when I came to Loughborough, I still saw myself as an 800 meter runner. And then probably a year or two into Loughborough, I'd run a few 15s and saw myself more as a 1500 meter runner. I think that said, I came to Loughborough with a PB of 3:49 for 1500. So I wasn't too sluggish at 15. And then I gradually became a solely a 1500 meter runner, did a few 3Ks as well. And then it probably wasn't until I was in my late 20s that I even ran 5Ks. Obviously did a bit of cross country and road and things like that, but it was always about the track for me.
And as a junior, was there a particular success or a moment that you realized you were good or that stands out?
The one thing that always stands out in my memory is South of England champs as an under 20. I went in with a PB of something like 4:11 and finished the weekend with a PB of 3:54, which was a pretty solid 17 second improvement. My coach going into the heats, so I was coached by a great guy called Les Pitwood, who still sort of loosely keep in touch with Strava and Facebook and things, but he set a lot of I guess running like morals, work ethics, kind of like things quite early as in my teens. But he told me that going into that race, your heat is the final. If you run a PB, great, you've had a good weekend. And I can't remember exactly what I finished in the heat, but I made the final. I think I might have even won my heat because I was treating it as a final. I ran just inside 4 minutes and then came back the next day and was racing against a guy called Michael Smart, who's kind of a legend as an under 20, and another guy called Robbie Bogdan, who was a pretty phenomenal athlete and definitely a cross-country runner. And I finished third behind the two of those. And that was, that's probably my best junior memory.
Yeah, I definitely take a 17-second improvement on my 1500. And then obviously at Loughborough, you were coached by George Gandy for a number of years and then became part of his coaching setup when I joined. You were anyway. What sort of impact on you as an athlete and a coach did George have?
George kind of has taught me almost everything I probably know and apply, more in terms of a philosophy than kind of like sessions. So I guess kind of like periodized training, certainly this sort of some of the strength training that we do, and I'm not talking necessarily about weights and gym, talking about hills, getting fit, getting strong. I guess kind of as a 1500 meter runner, there was, you need to be able to do a little bit of everything, but do most of it pretty well. So I think kind of, approaching the winter, like everything before Christmas was just go away and get fit. Whatever racing you do is a bonus, and things like kind of Liverpool Cross was never a target, but it was an opportunity to just see where you were with kind of training. After Christmas was always kind of getting a little bit a little sharper, reintroducing the speed, and then kind of getting to the summer, you really kind of got moving. But I think one of the things I personally learned was you don't need to do a lot of track work to be a good track runner. And from running indoors, we did, my best indoors was 3:43, and I think I did four track sessions before I ran that. Just because you're strong, you just had to get the legs moving again. We were always doing drills, weights, strides, everything is part of kind of that conditioning, which you just need to remember that you don't need to be going running 200 reps, 400 reps continuously, because there are alternate ways of getting that conditioning there.
Yeah, and I think that surprised me when I went to Loughborough for the first time, like 18 months ago now, I suppose, to see like the 800 and the 1500 meter runners slogging out grass sessions with the cross country runners, the 10K runners. That surprised me. And then, like, as you say, I did primarily last summer 10K training, all on the road, tracks were shut, did a few track sessions, and then like surprised myself massively on the track. And like you say, it's just all from strength, that strength comes from endurance, speed comes from endurance.
Yeah, you see, I think kind of probably said it to you. If not, I will say it to you, that you know, to run a 3:45 1500 meters, you don't need to be particularly quick. There's quite a few people that can run about 60 seconds for 400 meters, and that's all you need to be able to run. You don't need to be able to run 50 seconds. You just need to be able to run them like back to back. And just because you can run a 50 second 400 meters doesn't mean that you can run 10 seconds slower and you can do four of them without a rest. It's a different, you know, it's a different energy system. So it's kind of, yeah, get strong.
And do you think the way you moved up through the distances, do you think that's benefited you in the long run, or do you sort of think you could have started longer distances earlier?
I guess it's kind of regret is I didn't do more 5K work. Because I think I could, you know, I could do a bit more at 5K than I did. I think though, for me anyway, I think it's personal for everybody, isn't it? I really enjoyed racing on the track. Like that's, I guess, going to kind of like memories. I made the British Champs 1500 meter final 7 out of 8 years. Like that's a pretty good record. Just even to kind of like to be there and in that kind of shape. So I enjoyed that. I don't really wish I'd moved up distances that much quicker. I probably didn't see myself running a marathon debut as I did the other day. So, but again, I think it's, you have to have a certain amount of pace, like, and conditioning. And that's probably one thing that I got from my time at Loughborough was that, you know, I did maybe, you know, as a student and then like after as a student and staying involved in the group, I did strength and conditioning work for probably a good 10, 12 years, you know, drills, weights, circuits, the whole lot. So, actually when it came to upping the distance, you know, mechanically and physically, it was in pretty good shape.
Yeah. And then moving up to the marathon, you ran 63:54 for the half, I believe. Was that in London, the Vitality?
It was Barcelona. I ran Manchester half in 2019, the autumn of 2019. And it was more, I'd run a few 5Ks on the track. I wasn't really sure what running I was doing, but I was going out and doing enough to still be in pretty decent shape. Hopped in with a few sessions with Kevin Seward and I decided I was running Manchester and decided I was going to do some of his sessions with him. And ran 64:20 or thereabouts, and surprised myself and thought that was all right, actually. Went to Barcelona 6 months later and ran 30 seconds quicker, which was a completely different race and far harder than Manchester because I went out far, far quicker and had to hang on for the last 5K, which hurt like hell.
And then moving up to the marathon, was it the success in the half or was it the opportunity of the trials that made you wanted to move up?
I guess a bit of both. So I started working with Andy Hobdell in February last year, February 2020, just before Barcelona, really. But by proxy, I'd done his training for probably 6-9 months before that because he coaches Kevin Seward, and I'd done all of Kevin's sessions and was effectively getting forwarded the training to go and join him with. Obviously, Andy's got a great record with, definitely with marathon runners, but, you know, everybody from 1500 upwards, maybe even 800. And I think that was kind of, I'd talked about thinking of doing a marathon, and I guess the trials came along. Kevin was training, Tom Evans was in the group. So we had a pretty awesome group of three of us to run with. And actually that's worked most of the time through COVID really well. So we've been able to get out and do like-minded sessions at a like-minded pace with like-minded people.
I've obviously seen you around the streets of Loughborough quite regularly, and yeah, it just looked like a perfect group to be in. What were like the differences between like the training you have been doing and your like the weekly schedule from when you started marathon training? What were the philosophies that changed?
I guess two things. One was just kind of time on your feet. So just a lot of running, but a lot of it at a reasonable pace. So a lot of my steady, in inverted commas, pace running was is 6 minute miling. So there's, you know, I probably run around the sessions 3 or 4 days a week at a decent distance at 6 minute miling, and have, you know, what, maybe one day which is not that pace. So that was just upping that, I guess, the overall pace of the training week. And then we were doing a lot of running at paces just outside marathon effort, really. So a lot of the sessions were around 5:20 miling, but not supposed to be particularly difficult per se. Like they were quite a long way, but you weren't ending them absolutely exhausted. You were tired, and we were, general fatigue was quite high. But we just kind of, you know, built up the pace, the overall pace of the weeks all the way through the marathon block. And as we came sort of closer to the race, the average pace just drops for the session. So we kind of, you know, went from somewhere between the 5:20 to 5:30 kind of pace to probably down to five minutes to 5:10 sort of effort.
Yeah. And then you did quite a few like double session days as well, I think, didn't you? What was the thinking behind them, when 30 mile days, I suppose, in total?
Yeah, plus a bit. I think my biggest day was 35 miles. So special blocks, we did quite a few of them. It's time on your feet, and conditioning, and also mental conditioning. Like like those last 4 miles of the marathon were horrendous, and the fact that I could draw on that, I did a 35 mile day, and my pace for the 35 miles was 6 minute miling. I knew I could get to the finish line. Just had to be sensible and listen to my body, or my body was telling me. But yeah, it's physical and mental conditioning.
The thing that impressed me most about your marathon training is obviously balancing it with a full-time job, 3 children, is that right?
3 kids.
And then, I'd say 110 plus mile weeks, early starts. How did that work? How did you make that work?
So the decision to run a marathon and actually kind of attack it, in a sense, to see, you know, to genuinely see what I could do, was a decision that me and my wife made. Because it's pretty selfish, being honest. I think my average for the 16-week block, so it's a 16-week training block, I think I averaged just under 110 for the 16 weeks. My biggest week was 120, and it's not kind of, I guess, gloating, it's just kind of what we were set and I did. I guess it was just a balance, really. COVID helped in the sense that I was working from home, so, and I can start work in my office at 8:15, 8:30, and I haven't had to you know, to ride into Loughborough or go down to London or anything like that, which was a huge benefit. The same with finishing work, that I would generally start relatively early so that I could finish, and then I'd get out the door, and you know, it would be, you know, probably 5:30 out the door, do the next run or the next session, and then try and get back to help with the kids. The session nights were more difficult. My wife had to put the 3 kids to bed when I was out. And the same with Saturday mornings, kind of, it literally wrote off like the whole of Saturday morning. And when it was special block days, it wrote off the whole of the day. So, we just kind of agreed that it was temporary. Me and my wife, agreed that it was a temporary, way of training. And we would have a fairly normal life afterwards.
Yeah. And I think what a lot of people say is that the biggest obstacle, I suppose, with the marathon is just getting to the start line in one piece. There were quite a few notable names not at the trials because they were injured. Obviously, Johnny Mellors was a bit of a freak, but I think Jess Piasecki, Steph Twell, Charlotte Perdue had all been injured. How, yep, like, did you get through uninjured, and were there any niggles that you worried?
Yeah, I had a few niggles. I think the overall pace that we run at meant that I suffered with my calves getting really tight. So I had physio massage every 2 weeks. Saw Tony Woodward, who works just outside Loughborough, who's been, was good. I guess, you know, look after the body. I did a reasonable amount of stretching, more than I probably have done before. I was, you know, pretty good at sleep routine. Like, so I was, you know, going to bed somewhere between 9 and 9:30, probably asleep by 10. And I was up at 5:45, 6 o'clock. So I was just about getting 8 hours sleep, which I seemed to be okay on. I did have, I said my calves were tight, which has meant like my right Achilles and ankle has been, I think, sore for about 6 months, but it's muscle tightness more than anything else. I would get a tight back, but again, like stretching and massage and physio was enough to kind of keep on top of it. Again, the advantage of COVID is you barely saw anybody. I think, you know, other than Kevin and Tom, I didn't really see anybody outside of, you know, my family. And you know, Kevin and Tom was just running outside, so I never got a cold. I can't remember the last time I actually got a cold, which is unusual. Like, yeah, you don't often get through a winter without having a cold or the flu. So, you know, I'd take that. And I think probably that helped, just in terms of physical conditioning, that you know, you weren't really doing as much as you would in normal life.
Yeah. And when, like, as I say, you got to the start line in one piece, and was there a particular session or a moment kind of within the training block that you thought indicated a time you're going to run? Was there like a real confidence boosting session?
I don't know. I think it's over. I think it was an overall progression in kind of like self-belief. I'd said to myself before starting the marathon block or like trying to enter, was like 220 was like, I wasn't going to do a marathon if I didn't think I could run inside 220. That was kind of what I personally thought I would be satisfied with. And as we got through the training, I sort of, you know, I was like, actually, we're running 520s all the time, which was 220 pace. I was like, okay, I'm pretty confident with that. And then we started to go through the paces a little bit more. And I guess, like, I believed I could run 215. I thought I maybe could run a bit quicker, given, you know, the last maybe 3 or 4 weeks of training we did, you know, quite a lot of 10 to 15 mile sessions at close to 5 minute miling. There's nothing really stands out, is one session, but I think we repeated a couple of sessions. We didn't do the same sessions, but we did special blocks, and each time you went through them, you felt slightly better. You know, you came out the other side of saying, I've just done a 22 miler, you know, at a pretty decent pace. Okay, I could definitely run another 4. So I think the belief that you could actually cover the distance at a decent pace was there from those sessions.
Yeah. And then what's like next from here, I suppose? Do you see yourself going back to the marathon or like track British champs this summer?
I will probably run something on the track. I haven't really given it a huge amount of thought yet. I've got an easy week now, an easier week next week, and then we'll probably start to get into some running again. If maybe a 5K on the track, and then, you know, if some road races come back around again. I've done in the past quite a lot of the Leicester Road Running Leagues, which have been great fun. Like, they're awesome races, but we'll see whether any of those are on later in the season. In terms of another marathon, I'll see. It's sort of work, life, family, and the commitment to marathon is quite difficult. Yeah. So I think if at the moment I was to do another marathon, I would want to run quicker than I did, which means I know that I need to put in the investment that I've just done, which again comes down to a conversation with my wife around what we think is possible.
Yeah. And in terms of kind of PBs at the throughout different distances, as I said, 149 and 342 for the 8 and 15, and then 5k ran 13:56, and then 10k ran 30:12 officially, but Leeds Abbey Dash was 23 meters short.
Yep.
And 29:26, what's that, 29:30 if you had 23 meters?
Yeah, not too far. It's still under 30.
Yeah. So is that one you want to go back and get that sub 30?
the official 10K time would be a good one. I think I don't really kind of know what I'll go and do next, but I think if it sort of two clear targets would be to run it's close to 62 something as I could for a half, and if I could dip inside 29 for a 10K, I think that's doable. So yeah, we will see. I think the training's it's intense, but it's not quite as monotonous or selfish as the marathon training.
And one event I don't think you have done is Night of the 10K PBs. Is that on your list? Because I've done it and it was amazing. I ran pretty terribly, but it's an amazing event. Is that one you'd like to do?
Yeah, I've been messaged about running it before from Ben. And never done it, but I don't think I've ever really kind of truly believed as a 10K runner. Maybe I should. I don't know about a track 10K. As you like, I've said that I don't mind laps, but 25 laps of an athletics track is different from 12 laps, 12 2-mile laps to run a marathon. Possibly, yeah.
And then obviously you're getting involved in coaching as well, and at Loughborough as a coach. What made you want to kind of go back to university, get involved after finishing as a student?
I never really left the group, if I'm honest. But I think, I've always lived around Loughborough since I moved here as a student at 18. George was great at kind of keeping me involved. I don't know whether it was because I was sort of drifting a little bit from kind of, maybe lost my passion for continuing to run track races, and it was George's way of keeping us involved a little bit more in the group. I think one of the things that George always said was I said about his philosophy that I'd done the program for so many years, I understood kind of why we do what we do, why we try and keep the group together as we do, and I think he wanted somebody there that had kind of lived and breathed it as much as they had done the kind of the qualifications, and that was kind of like my entry into it. And I think as I have with you, kind of I'm quite happy to kind of pass on advice as much as I don't particularly stand there with a stopwatch, but I'm happy to help and guide, because I think that's one of the things that I really benefited me was understanding why I was doing something, what the progression was, and I guess as an onlooker, seeing people, and I said it before, like just trying to run as fast as they could all of the time. That's not how you become a better runner. You don't need to always be the fastest person to win the race. I guess giving something back is nice as well. I've had a lot of help from a lot of people over the years, whether it's just little bits of advice here and there. And I think, that's great. Chris and Sonia are massively enthusiastic and dedicate a lot, a huge amount of time to Loughborough. So I think just, being able to be part of that is kind of a bit of a privilege as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, I've been at Loughborough for 18 months now. And like you say, it's a shame the last, year, I suppose now, we've not been able to do the group sessions that we have and like the Sunday long runs and all that kind of thing. But even without that, it's still such a kind of brilliant program to be a part of, and hopefully soon it will be back to more.
Yeah. What it was.
So just to finish off, just a few kind of quick fire questions. So what's your favorite race or like actual event? So not a distance.
My favorite event. One event that sticks in my mind was I got to run the trial event for the 2012 Olympics. Yeah. Ran a 3K in the Olympic Stadium. That was flipping awesome because it was only half full down the back straight and a few people on the home straight, and it was still really loud. That or probably indoor racing, again for the same reason that any of the British indoor champs, it's always kind of small and contained and loud. And it kind of, you feel kind of really, really up for it. from a road point of view, I've probably got some good memories from like 12 stage road relays with Newman Essex Beagles. And Bob Smith, who was our team manager, he was an absolute legend at getting everybody out. So yeah, probably those.
Yeah. And if you go for a long run with any athlete, obviously you do a lot of that with Kevin Seaver and Tom Evans, as you say, but any athlete, who would you choose to run with?
I don't know. So that's a difficult question. I run with Kevin because he talks like endlessly, so I don't really have to think about what I'm, I could just listen for an hour and a half, 2 hours. I guess somebody like, you know, is a running hero, we'd probably go with Gabri Selassie because he's just awesome.
Yeah, can't be that. Favorite and least favorite session?
Least favorite session, I'll pick one from my 800 meter running days. And it was either five or six by 300 or 5 minutes recovery. And it just made you sick. Yeah. It was pretty much run as fast as you can for each one. There was little control in it. That's probably my least favorite session. My favorite session was a George Gandhi special of what we always used to call split sixes. So 400 meters, 20 seconds recovery, 200 meters, and then 5 minutes to repeat it four times. I knew I was in good shape when I knew what times I could hit. And yeah.
Track, road, or cross country, what's your favorite?
Now, road. Yeah. Prior 2 years ago, I would have said track.
Yeah. And last one.
Not cross country.
pacing lights, yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we've had this debate on here. I think they're brilliant as a viewer. If it was my world record being beaten by someone with pacing lights, I'm not sure I'd be in favour of them in the same way. But yeah, I think as a viewer, it's like the swimming, isn't it? When you have the line on the screen, it does add to it.
I think I'd be less annoyed about somebody breaking it with pacing lights or a pacemaker. I don't really see much difference between a pacemaker and and pacing lights than I would about somebody breaking my record by a tenth of a second with some of the latest shoes and spikes.
Yeah,
bringing shoes and spikes into this.
Yeah, what are your views on spikes? Are you not? Obviously, you wear.
I've raced in them. I don't see why anybody wouldn't race in them. They've changed kind of like times and expectations. Like me personally, I don't have an issue with them. But it is. I think they are actually kind of making a difference. I don't train in. I did a couple of sessions just to make sure I was kind of, you know, comfortable in the shoes, but I did all my training in regular flats or trainers. But yeah, I think it's a difficult one when you've seen so many times road and track get broken.
Yeah, I agree. I think the fact that everyone wears them suggests there is.
I think there is, and I think from certainly from my point of view, it's, I guess, like sort of later in my running career, it's always been a personal challenge for me to run more than it has been to kind of, you know, to beat anybody in particular. It's always been about being better than I was the last time I did it. So kind of it skews that slightly for me. And kind of like talking around sort of like 10K times I ran Leeds Abbey Dash in a pair of Adidas Adios, and I ran my first half marathon in a pair of Adios as well. And then I only ran 30 seconds quicker over the half in a pair of in the Next Percents, which I thought I would have run quicker. I thought I was in better shape, but I ran quite a different race. But maybe they were held, like, let me hold on at the end. Who knows?
Yeah, I think they just need to be acknowledged that they are making it. I think there are obviously benefits. It's maybe better for injury prevention or something that they're good for the sport in a way, making it more it's in the media more. And
yeah, Dowie Griffiths quote pre the Olympic trials was kind of like, it's effectively having free time. I think is a great, like, you know, it's a great little soundbite snippet, because it, you know, it is like, you still have to do all the training. Like, yeah, you cannot go into a race without being a, you know, as best as you can be, but those shoes will help you run a little bit quicker than they would if you didn't have them on.
Yeah. I think the one thing I don't like about people saying they're not good for sport is it doesn't seem like there are any good athletes anymore. Sometimes someone runs a crazy quick time. It's nothing to do with the athlete. It's all to do with the shoes or something else. Yeah.
I think it's also a bit more of a level playing field now that a lot of the other brands have got a shoe out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, you know, you've got to pick between, you know, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, Asics, On. I think they've just put theirs out, haven't they? So, you know, it's not kind of like you're just stuck as you were a year or so ago with just having Nikes.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on your performance last week and good luck over the coming months and whatever's next for you. Obviously, I'll see you in Loughborough again pretty soon, but yeah, thank you again for coming on.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Bye. We'll be right back.